the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the ADVFN podcast, episode 256. On the podcast today, it's a Seb Resource special. And coming up, I've got Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Seb Resources. I've also got, I'm going to rerun an interview I did with the CEO, Dave Whitby, a couple of weeks back before he set off on his travels for the Far East with his team there. And also got the macro news and the broker forecast. But first, now the reason why it's a Seb Resource special is because earlier in the week, I featured a 10-bagger suggestion, and that happened to be Seb Resources, suggested by Big Gib, who we follow each other on Twitter. He suggested it, and so I read it out. Day later, in my inbox, an email from Dave, CEO of Seb Resources, saying thank you very much, and he said some nice things. So I emailed Dave back, said, well, thanks for listening to the podcast, Dave. Any chance I could read out your email? And he said, yeah, if you think it will help. So this is Dave's email. This is after he'd heard the 10-bagger suggestion on the podcast. He says, hi, Justin. Thanks for the soundbite as your 10-bagger pick. Much appreciated. No one would be more disappointed than me if we only get it to a 10-bagger. Wow. The team and timing are the key contributing factor as I see it. Love building an asset base when the sellers are struggling with more uncertainty in the oil price. Glad to be the hunter, not the hunted. Being a movie buff, I love the one-line wisdoms. One of my favorites is from The Rock. Success will be achieved by poise, precision, audacity, and resolve. Always wanted to put that on my business card, but just a bit much, I reckon. Have been enjoying your podcast, can see why you have such a large following. Chat soon. Cheers, Dave. And do you know what? You'll hear now. I'll play the interview, Dave. And he comes across a really nice guy, and he knows what he's doing. He's got a team there that knows what it's doing, as suggested in the 10-bagger suggestion. So I'm going to run the interview with Dave right now. Enjoy. And after that, you'll hear Alan Green also talking about Seb Resources. And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Seb Resources, David Whitby. Hi, David.
Hello, Justin.
Now, first and foremost, happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah,
the big 6-0, yeah?
Yes, it's more like 16 Celsius. That's what my friend said. You're not 60, you're 16 Celsius.
Yeah, cool. Like yeah. And are you celebrating big style?
No, we're pretty laid back. Yeah, family gets together and sort of comment on year past and let's go. Yeah,
let's get on with it. So, yes, okay, so let's get to the matter in hand. You've just been announced as, or recently, the CEO of Seb Resources. Yeah. So there are lots of people listening to the podcast are new to investing and they're trying to find their way around the market. Some of them just go for the big stocks with dividend payers, and other people are looking for like going to AIM and looking to sort of, get high potential. And, because AIM stocks on AIM can double, triple, overnight almost. But there's also a lot of risk in there. So first and foremost, David, tell us a bit about yourself, your background, for example.
Well, I'm Canadian by birth. I took my education at the Royal Military College in Canada and was an Army officer for 4 years, and then started in the field with Husky Oil and pumped wells and learned the business from, from getting oil on your shoes type thing and moving up. And then in 1990, Laura and Rebecca and I decided to move to Indonesia. We hadn't actually worked overseas, so we chose that. And that started a love affair with both the gas industry and that country. And then subsequently, I've sort of been at the top end and the bottom end of various jobs. I was vice president of Husky Oil back in Canada. I was vice president of Gulf Indonesia. So I'm also president of Nito Petroleum and a few others. So, yeah, I've sort of been around the track a little bit, Justin. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have experience. And financially, how has your record been, your track record with these other companies? Has it been good?
Yeah.
What are you most proud of?
Well, I think there's two things I'm probably most proud of. One is having the opportunity to make a difference in Indonesia. I was first hired when the company I worked for had one untested gas well, and they said, can you do something with that? Back then in 1990, gas wasn't a big thing in Indonesia. So I was sort of that one lone voice, and from that voice sort of, became an army. And I think I was probably involved in orchestrating probably five of the biggest gas contracts in the country. And that just sort of teaches you a thing or two and how to get around it. And I think the other thing that, equally proud of is that I I wanted to touch, dip my toe into sort of the public markets, and I took over a company called Nitto Petroleum on the Australian Stock Exchange. And it only had a market cap of 1.6 million. And honestly, I sort of figured, how could I screw that up? They had a toehold in the Philippines, and we acquired a big acreage position. And I think before the GFC struck everything down, it was at about a market cap of 620. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. It was a good run, I must admit. But you know,
it was a cracking run, that was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you know, for a first timer, it's fortunate. So.
Yeah.
But you know, you learn a lot, and probably you focus on what you could have done better than what you did, and decide to, you know, give it another go, particularly in a country that I understand a fair bit and I had a fair bit of experience in. So yeah.
So how long have you had experience now in Indonesia? Because that's where, just to put this in context, that's where Seb is focusing its attention, isn't it?
Yes, that was my intention, is to focus Seb on onshore Indonesia, particularly oil, then move into some gas. Sort of down in the grubby end of, you know, of the industry is where you can make the most money, and pretty confident about it, and you know, pretty passionate about the country and the industry, so it sort of fits with what I want to do. But I first went into Indonesia in 1990. And that was with the first gas project. Also delivered gas, orchestrated a project to Singapore from South Sumatra, then to West Java. Did a rather unique consulting job for Pertamina itself against my former employee, who a big gas field went on to Pertamina acreage, and they asked me would I mind coming representing them against ConocoPhillips, which was probably the most gratifying project. I guess all in all, maybe 18 years, probably 20 on and off type stuff, yeah.
And that's, is that what makes a difference, having experience in that area? Because, yeah. I mean, for example, could a good oil and gas man transfer his skills to anywhere in the world, or does it help to have, you know, local experience, basically?
Well, honestly, after 20 years in there, I feel I'm just trained.
Yeah.
Is probably the best way to look at it. You know, lots have tried to come in and grab an acreage here, a piece there, and move into it, but, you know... For me, I think the biggest strength that I have is I have a crew of Indonesian staff that I've worked with for almost from the beginning. So we're sort of, as I sort of laughed at one of the other interviews, sort of like the Blues Brothers putting a band back together.
Yeah.
You know, bringing this crew that are really the best, and I, you know, trusted and gifted colleagues is the way I refer to them at. So, you know, it is it is the people that actually allow you to understand, to find the opportunities. I'm sort of the chief strategist, and you know, in the face of it, but it's the boys and girls that are on the team that can really make it rock and roll. So yeah, that's pretty much important to doing business in that part of the world.
Okay, so in Indonesia now, so what are you looking at? I mean, what areas, are there certain fields you focus on right now, or what stage are you at there in Indonesia?
Well, I guess the one way when you're running a company, it doesn't matter whether it's public or not, you know, you try to sort of get a few precepts into your department. And mine is sort of focus, asset depth, and core competency. Those are the three things. For us, we're going to focus primarily on Sumatra, which is where the heart of the oil industry is. We found a number of small oil fields that were, you know, shut in 20 years ago when the oil price was $20, you know, that haven't been effectively rejuvenated. We're going to stay on shore, existing production. I've spent a lot of time offshore exploring, and that's a high cost, long term sort of process that, you know, a market cap such as Seb shouldn't be into. So, yeah, so we're doing that. And we probably screened, multiple projects, and we have quite a unique screening tool. And so we whittled it down to about 12, and I think we're working on 4 now. Pardon me. And so that sort of gives us a project pipeline, so we can get some asset depth. And I think I mentioned the core competencies, you know, the team both in country and worldwide is pretty much the group that'll deliver the value. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so I recently had a placing there, raised a gross $1.5 million. What is the time frame, for example, for the next, you know, bit of news coming out of, Serbia and Indonesia? I mean, do you look at a time frame? Do you say, right, we've got to get this done in the next 12 months, or what's the score there?
Well, I do look at time frame, but I also know the minute I commit to something, it's probably wrong. But, you know, we have a little 100-day plan, and when I take over companies, I always put a 100-day plan in place, and that focuses everybody, you know, on each day. You know, at the lab, I tell everybody, I says, you know, how do you lose a year on a project? And the answer is one day at a time. Mm-hmm. You know, so those first 100 days, we focus real hard on it. We would be pretty disappointed if we don't have some, you know, some material news by that time. But, you know, I have to sympathize a little bit with some of the investors, is that everybody looks at it and I sort of say, well, we've only been trading for 10 days. You know, this is a value play and a long-term play, but it's a good start.
Yeah, because, I mean, the share price sort of spiked up back in May there, May the 15th, and then obviously the suspension pending this, the raising of the money and the news. And so it has been 10 days. It's a little bit down a day. So the placing price was 0.4, wasn't it? And now it's 0.485. So you think that you'll have, hopefully, get some news out almost within 3 months.
I think it'll be sooner than that. By nature, I may be a passionate man, but I'm not a patient one. So, you know, we've got the team in Indonesia now working hard on it, you know, you know, you don't want to jeopardize a deal by putting a time frame on it or whatever, but I think we have enough irons in the fire that we'll be able to, you know, come up with something pretty pretty unique.
Marvellous. So what's the, maybe I'll see a last question, Dave. What's the most exciting thing that's getting you fired up at the moment?
Well, honestly, it's to run a public company and talk about a country that I really understand.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably the biggest thing. You know, when I built Nido, it was on the Philippines, and I really didn't know much about it. So I had to learn all about it, learn the play type, and, you know, find the story and tell it. Indonesia is one that I actually helped build to a certain extent. So it's something that I'm really looking forward to is, you know, educating the shareholders and the investors about the opportunities and just educating them about the country itself.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It seems like, you know, certainly Seb here hit the ground running because they found you yourself there, a man, you know, in the know, you know, in situ, which is obviously a part of the battle, isn't it? You know the area, it's almost like a battleground. You know the battleground, you know, and you know how to fight it sort of thing. And you've got a good team there you trust. You remind me, not so much of the Blues Brothers, but that film with Bruce Willis, is it Armageddon, where he has a big drillers and he's got his team and goes to the moon?
You're
the Bruce Willis character.
Yeah, well, that's a classic, actually. You wouldn't be the first one to make that comparison, as embarrassing as it is. But that's the type of thing. I really do have a great team, and you know, Indonesia, everybody knows there's opportunities there. Heck, Marco Polo discovered oil there, and I think at 1241 or something like that. You know, so there's no question that there's oil there. The real question is that, you know, how do you unlock it? And I guess 20 years and probably 250 years of experience on the team teaches you that, you know, maybe what to do and most importantly what not to do. So one way or the other, it should be a heck of a ride.
Yeah, well, it sounds to me, David, if you and your team can't do it, nobody can. So, you know, listen, David, it's been lovely to chat to you, and you'll have to come on again when there's further updates, and look forward to that. In the meantime, enjoy your 60th year and speak soon.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thanks for that.
And joining me on the podcast is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
I'm good, thanks, Jess. How are you?
Not too bad. How many stocks do you hold, Al, in your portfolio there?
I've got 10 stocks.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good number, I think. Yeah, you know, it's to keep an eye on. I'm trying to hard whittle down. But I think, do you know what? I've come to this idea, you know, the stock market is cyclical, like anything, and we know there are better times of the year and worse times of the year. I mean, there's bullish times of the year traditionally, like the end of the year, and of course you've got the summer months, which can be a bit bearish. And so sometimes the psychology of the investor is wrong. You know, like I said, the old cliche is, even before you probably got into the stock market, we were aware of buy low, sell high. And this seems quite obvious, but the psychology of the investor is such that when the panic starts hitting and the markets get low, people start selling. And you think, well, hang on, really? You should be buying there, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the old cliche. And when the market's topping out towards the end of the year or start of the new year, we should be trimming then, you know? And that's when you should sell some of the stocks that are all trimmed back on stocks, ready to pick up some bargains again when the market goes low again. You know, isn't it odd how we, you know, the most basic of cliches in stock market, investors find it hard to get their head around. Is the old Warren Buffett cliche, which he says, basically, I'm summarizing here, but he essentially says, you know, when others are fearful, be greedy. That's when to buy. When others are greedy, be fearful. That's when to sell. And that's the way, it's the same way of saying, you know, buy low, sell high, isn't it? And this year, I'm determined to get the cycle right. And it's hard to sell. When some of your stock's doing really well, it's hard to take a profit because you think they're going to run and run and run. But they know we know there's always pullbacks, you know? So this year, I'm going to try. Are you any good at that, Al, at timing the market as well as timing the market? Because you can do both, I believe, you know?
Well, I was actually forced into it. I was actually forced to make those calls back in 2007 because I'd moved my pension from my company into a SIP. Started trading there, thought I was doing really well. And then, of course, the credit crunch happened. And like everyone, you think it's going to get better and it gets worse and gets better and gets worse. And eventually, I'm looking at my decimated pension pot thinking, what the bloody hell am I going to do? So I had some cash. That, you know, the stocks are still paying dividends. So I started picking up blue chip stocks on the bottom. And of course, everyone was running, screaming from the market at that point. But yes, it came back. And, you know, speaking to some of my old contacts in the city, guys that have been around for years and seen cycles like this several times over, just said, it will come back. The markets will come back. They always do. And it's, yeah, if you can have that discipline, and it's the hardest thing in the world when everyone's screaming at you, to run from the markets and leave well alone. It's the hardest thing in the world to step in and buy. But you've got to shut out the noise. You've got to really, really be objective and make it work for you. And that's why I think having a limited portfolio of stocks helps you to focus on each stock, really get to know the companies that you're buying into, and understand the dynamics that have made the stock fall, and you know whether it's just a move with the markets or whether it's something more sinister or serious. But it's a really good discipline to have. But Warren Buffett is absolutely right. You know, he's got it wrong too. He made the call on Tesco and he then admitted or said that he got Tesco wrong. But has he got Tesco wrong? I mean, Tesco seems to be coming back a bit now, you know, so...
Yeah. Well, I think every now and again, you're going to, you know, mistime it. So I think he had the... You know, it was the biggest player in the supermarket game in this country, but it, of course, no one could foresee the change in the shopping habits and the competition elsewhere, I suppose. And so I suppose if he'd bought, you know, at like the levels now, he'd probably be fine. You know, in 10 years' time, he bought about over £3, wasn't it, I think, and he put a chunk load in there. So he just mistimed and cut his losses, I suppose. But anyway, let's move on to the stock of the day. What are you looking at, Al?
Well, it's a company we've discussed before, and you have the CEO, Dave Whitby, on the show.
Nice guy, actually. Yeah, I mean, he comes across as a real genuine person, you know, and you've got a feel for people like that. You can tell, can't you? And he seems like he's... Because I know these small stocks sometimes, you know, you question the leadership or the management there, but straight away I was chatting to him, and even beforehand and after I read the record, he was like, oh, was that okay? Anything else I can do? And really helpful, you know, and I thought, oh, that's a nice guy, actually. You know, he's the kind of guy I would trust investing in.
Absolutely. Well, Dave is a great guy. I agree. I've spoken with him. And of course, we're talking about CEB Resources here. The epic code is CEB. I've also known Cameron Pierce, the chairman of the company, for a little while too, and Cameron was interviewed on Tip TV about a year ago. In fact, it was longer than that, about 18 months ago, and you know, just explained and set out the stall of CEB Resources as a mining investment company. So rather than have everything tied up in one asset, it spread risk. It was involved in different projects and invested in those projects, and what we've got now, bringing Dave Whitby in as MD, is a really exciting opportunity where the company have raised some money through Cornhill Capital to make some investments into Indonesian oil and gas assets. And we had an update about a week ago from the company to say that they've hit the ground running, identified multiple opportunities, bring it down to about six primary sites that have been identified as likely targets. The company Corsair Petroleum, which is involved in the JV, also includes Ross Warner. And Ross Warner is, of course, exec chairman at Northcote Energy. And Northcote Energy also have a share in this in any find that CEBI identifies from the Indonesian assets. It's got the rights to participate in them, and of course it's also backing the whole process too. What Dave has also done, though, he's been in the business for many years. He's been involved in a Canadian company. He's also worked for ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, has many years experience. He's brought together a team of people that he's worked with for years to make this happen. So all the building blocks are in place to make this a really exciting project. And of course, Seb Resources is currently trading about 0.5p. It's got a 3.8 million market cap. The potential scale of what could be found there could potentially dwarf this. Of course, I'm not trying to build this up into something it's not, but it's you're looking at some big projects here which could potentially be transformational for the company. It's a long way to go before we actually move into identifying the sites and starting work on the sites and moving into production. But the company is at a very exciting stage in its development, and I think, as we've seen, the reaction of the share price and the markets, this is a stock that everyone is getting very excited about, and it is a genuinely small, tiny little mining company that has potential to participate in some huge assets. And one of the other interesting things is too that clearly the oil and gas industry, there are many well-known sites and fields throughout the world, but Indonesia is a massive economy. It's a huge country, 270 million population, and the oil and gas industry effectively sort of began in Indonesia many years ago, and yet today, as a region compared to other oil producing regions, there's very little known about it. The activities there are very few indeed. So potentially, the company could be on the verge of breaking into a new market or realizing a new market and bringing the potential and the potential resource in Indonesia to the fore. So it's at a very exciting phase, very exciting stage. Clearly, there's always risk involved with a little company and operations of this size, but Dave Whitby and his team have a tremendous amount of experience, and they won't engage, they clearly wouldn't engage in something like this if they didn't feel that there was really going to be something of great potential a little further down the road. So, yep, we're at early stages, but it's a really exciting company, this. So that's CEB Resources.
Yeah, well, do you know what? We all know about the BRICS companies, you know, the Brazil, India, China, Russia, and they're all in the top 10 most populous countries. But Indonesia is the fourth most populous country in the world, you know, and that's not included in that BRIC. And you think there's obviously going to be a lot of development there with that kind of population. But I quite like the chart here on CEB because it did sort of have a bull flag when there was announcements just before it went into suspension, because when they were talking about these assets, they had to suspend it. It's peaked over 0.6 and then opened back up there, just around about there, but it's come back a little consolidated a bit, but now it looks like a nice little support level, just 0.4 and maybe a resistance of 0.6. So you may see a little trading range there. And I think if you're really into stock, you can also, put a little stop loss just below 0.4, yep. You know, and, you know, have a living tour just there, and just and your support level's there, so it looks nice. But like I said, I was very convinced by Dave, and the way he spoke of his team as well, having a lot of confidence in those guys. He said they know the area, you know, they know what we're doing, and he didn't say it unlike other people who are in Indonesia trying to find basic things, assets. He said these guys know the land, you know, and they know the lay of the land there. And so he's very confident in his team, and he came across very well, I think. And a lot of people are excited by this. I mean, even my last podcast when I chatted to Dave Whitby, you know, I had a lot of listeners listening. Wow. And it just came across very well. So I'm sticking away from it at the moment because I'm all maxed out. I mean, if I don't invest in a person and a company in a small, in a penny stock, this would be it, I think, because I'm just convinced by Dave himself, because he seems like he's not a guy who's, you know, blowing smoke up his own backside. He's very down to earth, but he's also quietly confident in his and his team's ability, you know.
That's the thing. He's an oil industry veteran, and he's got I suppose it's like the Expendables, isn't it? You know, the old troops come back together, and these are all seasoned, experienced professionals that have been in the industry for a long time. And you know, in a sense, although, as you say, it's the fourth most populous country in the world, it's almost a new frontier, because there's so relatively little known about Indonesian oil and gas assets. So it's a really exciting opportunity, I think. And
I think you said to me when it was on the thing, it's like the Blues Brothers. I'm putting the band back together, man, and we all know how the Blues Brothers, they did very well after the band came back together. So,
yeah, the Blues Brothers.
Yes. Marvellous. That's CEB. Cheers, Al.
Cheers, Jess.
It's time for the macro news. In the macro news here, the UK housing market is beginning to hot up again as mortgage approvals rose by 8%. In a year, a banking body has said. So it's gone from a number of mortgage approvals in the house purchase increased to 44,488. I'll be testing you on the figures later, all right? So listen out, said the British Bankers Association. That was 5,000 more approvals than the average of the previous 6 months. That's good, isn't it? Also, oil prices edged up after closing at the lowest in months in the previous session as oversupply and disappointing Chinese factory activity dragged on the market. Oil prices in the United States have slumped more than 20% in the past 6 weeks, a slide considered to be by many traders to constitute a bear market for oil prices. The oil demand outlook dimmed out further on Friday after a preliminary private survey showed factory activity in China's struggling economy contracted by the most in 15 months in July. By the way, this is a survey. The market China manufacturing sector purchasing managing or PMI for July dropped to a reading of 48.2, a 15-month low, following a print of 49.4 for June. So as we know, anything above or below 50 is a contraction. Anything above is expansion. And the preliminary Eurozone manufacturing sector PMI fell to a reading of 52.2 for July after a print of 52.5 for June. And the consensus is also 52.5. So it's still expanding, but fell slowly. But China still in contraction mode. And it's quite a scary thing. And that's why all commodities are being hit here. Because the slowdown in China hasn't slowed down. It's slowed down a little bit, but it hasn't stopped. And that's the problem, the uncertainty. We need to see an uptick to help commodity prices, essentially. Okay, it's time for the micro news. Here's the good news. Vodafone's first quarter performance was solid, with organic revenue growth of 0.8%, above consensus of 0.5%. GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, I'd like to be known now. I don't know why people call them GlaxoSmithKline anymore. I own these. Malaria vaccine has passed its last scientific hurdle, although the immunisation programme in sub-Saharan Africa could still be over 12 months away. Ladbrokes has agreed a £2.3 billion merger with Gala Coral. Insurance company Beazley posted a 16.3% jump in first half net profit. Do you know what I always say? Whenever you see double-digit growth on a company, it's worth checking out the figures. I think Beazley was in my watch list for a while. I don't know why they've gone out, but you know, 16.3% jump in first half net profit is good. Mall owner Amazon returns on his property investments were up by 5.7% for the first half of the year, 1% higher than estimated. Here's the bad news. Diageo revealed the US Securities and Exchange Commission has launched an investigation into whether the company has been shipping excess stocks to customers to boost results. How does that work? Surely if customers don't want them, they won't have them, will they? Come on, have some more. No, we don't want any more. Have some more drinks. Come on. it's like a mate of mine. You know, if you go for a night with a mate of mine, you can't go for a quiet night with him, you know? Have a pint. No, I'll have one. Go on. After the first pint. Come on, here's the second one. He already bought it. It's on the table. I don't want another pint. Just have another one. Come on, drink that. Second one. Last one. Drink that. Okay, I've got the third one in. What are you doing? He's the equivalent Diageo, you know? Lonmin third quarter operations were held back by an increase of safety stoppages at the number of its injuries rose. Pearson posted a 0.4% decline in first half operating profit amid a slowdown in the US textbook market as it confirmed its guidance for the full year. And of course, Japan's Nikkei, which are famous for the Nikkei 225, has bought the Financial Times and Associated Businesses titles from Pearson for £844 million. Quite a rich price, that. Quite a good price for Pearson, but they've overpaid a little bit, apparently. And apparently that's the story with Japanese companies. Mergers and acquisitions, they almost always overpay. AG Barr fell after it said his first half profits would drop by almost 5% compared with the year before. Shares in Agrico fell after its interim and full year results are likely to miss market expectations as a result of ongoing security challenges in Yemen, and a further slowdown in its North American oil and gas-related businesses. Anglo American has maintained its dividend, but it posted a 36% drop in first-half underlying earnings before interest and tax amid declining commodity prices. And here's the broker forecast. There's four upgrades, no downgrades, and it's all Citigroup. Do you know, it's nice to see a broker working on a Friday. Only one broker, by the looks of it. Citigroup is upgraded, and they, do you know what? They're quite bullish on the mining sector, unusually. Citigroup, maybe an early play, has upgraded Randgold Resources to buy price target £46.44. They've also upgraded Hochschild Mining to neutral, price target 92 pence. They've upgraded Fresnillo to buy, price target £7.77. That's accurate. They've also upgraded Acacia Mining to buy, price target £3.12. You know, I'm quite upbeat on miners. Good miners, you know, like BHP Billiton. I know they're dropping in price, but the dividend they're paying, which is almost guaranteed, according to the CEO in the last financial statement, which is now over 6%, and you know, one of the biggest miners in the world, one of the most efficient producers of iron ore, and it is a race to the bottom. Them and Rio Tinto, I think Rio Tinto is a little bit more efficient than BHP Billiton and you know, getting the iron ore out. But you know, a lot of producers are going to fall by the wayside by the time this rout in price, especially copper. They're saying Dr. Copper is the thing to look at. Look at the price of copper; it's near a six-year low, and that's not good for the forecast of global growth. Because especially, it's all about the Chinese, yeah, all about them. You know what I'm saying? So unless they get their act together, the world's in a bit of a problem here. But you know, we're going through a period of uncertainty, I think, as to whether we think is the global recession, or you know, is this uplift going to turn into a recession at the moment, or just on a bit of a wobble? Because when there's uncertainty around, you find bad news prevails. You know, even if there's good news, it's swept under the carpet. And almost you can talk yourself into a recession. You know, if everyone believes it's going to happen, people stop spending, confidence drifts away, and people stop investing. And so it's a self-fueling, self-fulfilling prophecy. So don't talk about recession. You know, the global economy is okay. If you look at the GDPs of the expanding company, the biggest, you know, countries in the world, it's doing fine. Let's not be negative ninnies and tuck ourselves into a recession, because that can happen. Anyway, on that positive note, that's it for the podcast today. I've got another one tomorrow with Pete and Steve, two mates. It's a bit different from the weekday podcast, but we'll be chatting about stocks I've bought this week and all that stuff, and a bit of nonsense there. Don't forget, please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation in the podcast. It's only just opinion, and it's not your opinion. So please do your own research, as it's your own money. Thank you for listening. Speak soon. Oh, by the way, I'm chatting with my son Fred just after this bit.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
So it's the second week of our investor lesson with my son Fred, who's 5 years old. Now, Fred, last week you had your big bag of money. Do you know how much was in it?
Loads.
Loads. Yes, there was loads. So has it grown? Have you got more money since last week? Any more money since last week?
Yes.
Have you? How?
Because Nanny gave me one.
How much did she give you? £1?
No, she gave me one of those £2.
A £2 coin? Oh, that's good. So your money's gone up by £2. So do you remember what I talked about last week? Do you remember?
No.
Oh, excellent. Right, talk about stocks and shares. That means you can grow your money by buying a little bit of a company. Do you remember that? So if you bought a little bit...
No.
So if you bought a little bit of Disney, you could grow your money. Or bought a little bit of Peppa Pig, you can grow your money. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I will give you another pound right now, okay, for your money, if you can tell me anything I said last week.
No.
Right, I'll give you another pound, all right, if you can sing a Disney song.
La, 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 la. Yeah.
Peppa Pig is not Disney. You have just lost a pound. Yay. No kicking my studio, please. I'll find you a pound for that. Thank you. Right, so listen. So we're going to buy some shares in the company, okay? And you're going to earn money, okay?
Yes, that's what
you're
going to do. Yes,
so listen, remember this for next week. Listen to this. Remember this. I can grow my money by buying shares in a company. Say that. Right, get out!
I can grow my money with blah, blah, blah.
Out!